thanks for joining me for another episode of the Bottom Up Revolution podcast. I'm Rachel, Program Director at Strong Towns. A couple months ago, we came across an article, probably the result of a Google alert, in which a woman running for city council in Menlo Park, California, mentioned Strong Towns in a discussion about the need for incremental housing development. I followed her story and I was excited to learn that she won her election. So now I'm pleased to feature her on this podcast. Jen Wallison, like so many Strong Towns advocates, is someone who humbly observed where people in her city were struggling and then stepped up to try and change the situation. In her case, it was seeing how dangerous a nearby street was for kids trying to bike or walk to school. It was a problem for her own children, but she also recognized how many other kids were being impacted too, especially kids who couldn't get a ride from a parent instead. So Jen investigated. She contacted people, she showed up at meetings, she built a network of fellow advocates, and eventually she founded a group called Parents for Safe Routes to make local streets safer for everyone. She went on to sit on several local committees and eventually took that next step to run for city council, and she won. I know you'll learn a lot from Jen's story of transforming from someone who saw a problem to someone who was taking action, and eventually to someone who would get to make city decisions as an elected official. She's got tons of advice for you at the end, too, about how you can embark on a journey like hers. So settle in and listen to my conversation with Jen Wallison. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. Today's guest is Jen Wallison, a newly elected city councilor in Menlo Park, California, and an advocate for safe streets. Thank you for joining me, Jen.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
So can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your neighborhood slash your city?
Sure. Menlo Park is located right next to Stanford University on the peninsula in the Silicon Valley. And there's about maybe 35-ish thousand residents now that we're waiting for the new census numbers to come out. But it's a beautiful community with tree-lined streets, and it's not big, but it's going through some growth. A lot of development here. We have the headquarters of Facebook in our town. And we also have a formerly redlined neighborhood, which is called Bellhaven, on one side of the freeway, and then kind of very affluent neighborhoods on the other side of the freeway. So it's a really interesting place to live. Wonderful people live here, really smart, engaged. What drew us here was the sense of community. Some really good schools. We have wonderful neighbors. And my family settled down here about 8 years ago, right before my oldest child was starting kindergarten. I'm a proud Menlo Park resident.
I know that you have gotten really active on safe streets and making sure that kids can get to school safely. What kind of galvanized you on that issue?
Yeah, I'm kind of an accidental advocate here. I was a mom doing my own thing, minding my own business, and I was excited to have my daughter bike or walk to the neighborhood school 0.8 miles from our house. There's a kind of a street that connects my neighborhood to my daughter's then elementary school. And the first time we attempted to bike to school, I found out that that quiet, sleepy street that connects the school became a major commuting thoroughfare during commute hours. And it's a street that never was designed for the type of volume and activity that over the years has occurred on that street. So instead of it being the quiet street kind of that you see during the midday, in the morning and in the afternoon, there are kids biking, kids that have just are learning how to bike. There's teenagers heading to the local high school, many who just have their license. There's cut through commuters. A lot of the buses go down that street. And there's just, it's a street that was never designed for the type of volume or activity. And there's no sidewalks or really a good shoulder on that street either. So I quickly figured out that walking and biking was not a safe option for my family. We went out and, you know, we had the means to get a minivan and we started carpooling, which was a decent option for a few years. But I continued to be frustrated every time I traveled down that street thinking, you know, why can't my children have the opportunity to walk and bike to school? It's healthy. You get a sense of connection to your neighborhood. It's like a great way to stimulate the mind before school. And then also, the boundary lines of the high school district were redrawn in our community, and children that were once bused to other high schools were now coming to this neighborhood school, mainly from East Palo Alto, which is another formerly redline neighborhood. So it frustrated me that we were having children who might not have the option of having their family go out and buy a minivan, who had to walk or bike to school, and we weren't giving them a safe option to do so. So finally, after a few years of just being extremely annoyed, thinking, why isn't anyone doing anything about the street? I grew frustrated enough to blast out my first of many emails. And I had no idea who to email or whose problem it was. I didn't know if it was the city, or we have a part of unincorporated county there. There's another neighboring jurisdiction that kind of is on the other side of the street. I didn't know if it was the police or the school districts. I didn't even know if it was elected officials I should be communicating with or staff members. So I basically just went online and started searching for as many email addresses of all of those that I could find, and sent a huge email saying this is unacceptable. And I got a few responses back, and that kind of began my networking journey and learning about the history of the road. I wasn't the first parent to be frustrated about that street. Little by little, I had more conversations with people, more coffees, talked to more parents in my community that were frustrated about other streets with similar conditions, and realized this wasn't just an issue for my kids in my neighborhood, that this was kind of a citywide issue. And then learning about the greater Safe Routes to School movement, which led me to launch a local advocacy group called Parents for Safe Routes to enable all children to walk and bike to school safely and to get political support for making our streets safer.
I love hearing that journey from just seeing an issue and getting more and more frustrated about it and then figuring out slowly how to do something about it.
Yeah, it took a lot of years of kind of saying, you know, why isn't anyone doing anything? And then one of the most powerful things I did was I stood on the street corner during morning commute and afternoon commute and just took some video. And then I edited together on like a basic editing software, kind of a video showing the conditions. And at that point, it made it impossible for people to ignore once they saw for themselves what this road looked like during the morning and the afternoon. And one of the first things we did working with those neighbors who live in that neighborhood was we got parking removed during school hours on that stretch of road. And to this day, I'm still working, I think it's been about 5 years, on even improving that stretch of road more.
Wow, yeah, that's powerful. What happened next after you formed that group to advocate for safer routes to school?
Yeah, so once I organized Parents for Safe Routes, I started, like I said, talking to different parents and community members and neighbors in Menlo Park. And I identified different parents in all the different schools that we have in our community. And Menlo Park is extremely multi-jurisdictional. So we have, I think it's 5 school districts in our small city. We have, like I said, unincorporated parts of San Mateo County. We have the town of Atherton that kind of surrounds us. Our fire district is a separate agency. We have, you know, our city police. We have the town of Atherton's police. We have the sheriff and the CHP, and they all have different jurisdictions. So a lot of the work I did with Parents for Safe Routes was relationship building and just starting to get in the room where decisions were made. A lot of the work I did was showing up to meetings. I went from kind of trying to figure out what meetings to even attend to coming to the meetings and making different public comments to actually being assigned positions on some task forces, committees, and I ultimately got appointed to my city's Transportation Master Plan Committee. But I went from being kind of a bystander to someone that was actively participating in the conversations of how to make the community stronger. And while I pursued kind of this insider strategy, I also made sure that I was growing the base of supporters for the movement. So making sure that we had Parents for Safe Routes representatives in the different school communities in town that were growing our mailing list, sending out electronic newsletter, letting different parents and community members know via call to actions when different decisions were being brought before different decision-making bodies, and kind of really learning the mechanics of how local government works.
Yeah, that's so inspiring to hear. I mean, I think everyone has issues that bother them and frustrate them in their cities, and it takes a lot to figure out how to actually change them. And I love hearing how you have actually done that.
Yeah, and a lot of that was getting to know other local advocates in town. I remember when I first started, there's a woman in town who works for our local kind of sustainability organization, and she was really interested in the work I was doing, and she was offering to publicize some of the events I was doing and the calls to action petitions and things like that. And I kept thinking, wow, this woman's really nice. I wonder why she's so interested in what I'm doing. And through talking to her and then talking to other advocates, you begin to see the synergy and the connection between all of these issues. So as I mentioned in the beginning, some of the benefits to, you know, walking and biking to school, or you know, health or mental health, or a connection to the community. But obviously it has massive climate implications too. And so the more people we can get, you know, walking and biking and taking transit, then fewer cars are on the road. So learning from other advocates and building those alliances was really key for me, and also kind of the precursor to what led me to learn about even more issues, which ultimately led me to run for city council.
Yeah. So tell us about that next step, like deciding to jump into the fray of a city council campaign, especially during the pandemic. How did that go?
So it's funny. I'm kind of a middle-aged woman. When I was a kid, I was always really interested in government. There was an organization, it still exists, called Junior Statesmen of America that I was really involved in. I was involved in student government in high school and in college. I was doing leadership positions. But kind of as life happened, I kind of forgot about all that passion of mine and went on with my life. I got an MBA, worked in market research, had my family. And it wasn't until I started attending these council meetings and starting to look at all these policies that I kind of realized, oh, this was something that was of interest to me that I had a certain skill set and talent for when I was younger. So it kind of went full circle for me to find myself back in kind of looking at leadership and representing my community as I got older in life. As an advocate, you're always attending these meetings and showing up, and kind of you have your 3 minutes and then the timer dings and then, you know, you're done. And you're at the mercy of the decision makers to make the policies that you're really passionate about happen. And ultimately, I realized if I really wanted to have the values that I hold and that I feel my neighbors hold reflected in my community, I needed to become a decision maker. So that's what led me to run for office.
Once you decide to run for office in your community, like what's the next step? Obviously, like filing paperwork and things, but how did you build the momentum for your campaign?
As I was thinking about running a few years ago, it was actually exactly at that time that our city was threatened with a lawsuit that led to our city moving to district elections. So up until 2018, the city of Menlo Park, every resident elected every city council member. But because of the neighborhood that I mentioned, Bellhaven, which was formerly redlined, there was a plaintiff that alleged that minority community members faced an unfair disadvantage about being able to be elected to office. So in order to avoid the lawsuit, we switched to district elections. And then at the time, my neighborhood was not sequenced to have an election in the cycle that I was thinking about running. So the silver lining was that gave me two more years until my neighborhood and district came up to really kind of do more homework and to be better prepared. And I have to say that time was invaluable. And it just led me to talk to more and more stakeholders, community members, attend different kinds of meetings that I hadn't been attending. So I started my journey attending bicycle commission meetings, which ultimately became the Complete Streets Commission. But once I, you know, decided to run, I started attending some planning commission meetings, some housing commission meetings, environmental quality commission meetings, and really broadening my scope, attending different, you know, webinars and meetings having to do with housing and climate, equity, all different kinds of issues, so that once it came time for the cycle for me to run, I just felt that much more confident about my policy positions. I knew a lot more of the community members that were kind of on the inside and ready to go. And then, of course, we know, you know, the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. So did you switch to doing a lot of like online organizing and campaign events? Or were you able to still do some outdoor events or door knocking and things to drum up support?
So as I mentioned, I had kind of planned and thought about running for quite a while. So I had a very early start, which is pretty uncommon in our small city. So in January, prior to the pandemic, I already was out door knocking, and I had a, you know, a house party and a meet and greet with some neighbors. And so I was able to canvass 20% of my district before COVID hit. That was huge. Once COVID hit, you know, everything changed. I made a very tactical decision that safety was the number one priority. And given, you know, the vulnerable residents in our community, I just personally didn't feel comfortable going door to door. So we moved everything online. You have to be creative. I mean, just like everybody right now in 2020 and 2021, unfortunately, we've all had to kind of reimagine how we do things. You know, businesses are doing business differently. Schools are teaching differently. And, you know, politicians are campaigning differently. We held online events. I did a Q&A about climate that drew quite a few residents, another one about housing. You just learn to be flexible. And I think it's just reflective of the reality of the time we're living in. Because I was already a known member of the community, I think that that helped a lot in terms of people already knowing who I was and what I stood for.
Have you been able to keep the focus on safe streets, biking, walking, access as part of your campaign while incorporating other issues into your platform? How do you kind of balance, you know, that being really a passion of yours, but also having so many other issues that you care about too?
That's a great question. And so my campaign had three kind of major, I guess, values or priorities. One was, you know, people of all ages and abilities should be able to get around, so safe streets. Another is that climate change is an existential threat to all of us, and we must do things on a local level. And three, that multi-generational communities and diverse communities are stronger communities, so we need to add housing at all income levels throughout the city. And everything with an equity overlay and recognizing kind of our history in our city and what kind of recovery we can go into as we move forward. And while safe streets is obviously kind of my bread and butter and my deep passion, there are so many other issues facing the city and ones that are not just connected to, you know, those top priorities. I mean, we're looking at police reform, we're looking at different issues related to outdoor dining downtown. We're looking at, we have a train that runs through our city and we need to look at grade separations. I have residents calling with all types of issues. about their sewage system, which isn't even a city issue. It's a sanitary district issue. So it can be challenging to keep a focus on, you know, one particular issue. But I think that's where advocates really come in. So I'm no longer the chair of Parents for Safe Routes. I pass that on to another parent, which I'm really proud of being able to keep that going. And I've encouraged kind of my successor, you know, lobby me, remind me of what's going on. I'm going to do my best to keep an eye on the topics and the issues that are obviously near and dear to me, but it can be distracting with so many other needs occurring in town, especially with COVID and the economy. So I would encourage any advocates that are listening, especially, you know, if you know you have allies in elected positions, to reach out to them. They're relying on you to be the eyes on the street and to stay focused so that they can do their work.
Yeah, well said. So before we close, I want to ask kind of along those lines, what advice would you have for others who want to take action to make their town stronger, whether that is on building safer streets or deciding to run to office? Do you have any advice that you'd share with folks?
Oh boy, I'm sure I have a lot of advice. How much time do we have left?
as much as you want.
So, you know, you got to show up. You have to be willing to attend meetings that may seem boring at first, but I promise you, if you continue to show up, you're going to start figuring out what all the acronyms mean and what all the wonky information is. You might even realize that the thing you originally showed up for isn't even the most interesting or important thing that you learned sitting there waiting for your agenda item to come up. So show up and be persistent. Keep showing up. I once had, when I was getting started, a transportation commissioner at the time, when I showed up and I was clearly frustrated that the ask I had wasn't going to be pursued immediately, he said, you know, keep showing up and bring friends. So, you know, expand your base of people asking the same questions and pursuing the same passion. You need to build relationships. And even though you might get frustrated with, you know, maybe an elected official or a staff member or somebody else in the community, try to treat that person with dignity and respect. Because if it's anything like Menlo Park, it, you know, we're growing, but we're kind of a small town and people remember each other. And so you want to kind of don't burn bridges. Even though you disagree with somebody, try to keep things friendly and remember that, you know, everyone's trying to do their best for their community. I would also, this is kind of a one that I've found really important, follow the local paper and support your local journalism. People always wonder, like, how did you know that? Or where did you find that out? I'm like, I read the local newspaper. You know, maybe avoid the comments, like the trolling comments in the online section, but at least keep up on what's going on in town. And again, the more you read it, the easier it gets to read it because you know who the players are and what's going on. And then really run for office. This is the foundation of our democracy. And with everything that's going on at the Capitol and in DC and just what people's feelings are right now and their trust in government, this is us. It's kind of, there's a phrase I'm sure that Strong Towns is aware of, you know, you're not in traffic, you are traffic. You know, it's not, oh, government, like that is a representation of the people. So you get what you deserve. Please get involved. If you're passionate about a topic and you're waiting for somebody else to do something about it or for a decision maker to come along, look in the mirror and say, you know, what can I be doing? And what am I willing to put into that? And to that effect, it is hard to have the time and resources to do this work. And that's something that I recognize and reflect on my privilege, that I have the ability to basically do this full time and to engage. And that's something out of reach for most people. And we need to look at ways, and I would encourage, you know, reformers and advocates, how do we make participation more accessible? One of the, you know, silver linings of the pandemic has been online meeting participation. And we, the people who participate locally in a lot of the meetings, at least the word on the street that I hear, it's kind of a different crowd that's being brought to meetings and different voices being heard. So that's something we need to look at maintaining even after the pandemic. And how do we bring kind of the unheard voices into the room and into the decision-making chairs? And so those are things that I would encourage people to figure out how to work on. I actually did a program called Emerge, which is a Democratic women running for office training program. And I would encourage people to support programs that are lifting the voices and enabling people to run and hold office who otherwise haven't had those opportunities. So like I said, I have a lot of advice. Pay attention, be engaged. Our community is what we make it. And the future is bright as long as, you know, lots of people are being part of the decision making.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. Thank you for sharing all that rich advice. And thank you for your time, Jen Walson, City Councilor. We really appreciate the chance to hear from you and also wish you luck on your new term as an elected official. Very exciting.
Thank you, Rachel. Good luck to you.
Jen's story is so relatable and powerful. I'm inspired by hearing about her journey, and I hope it's the push that some of you need to get out there and think about running for office too. We've got tons of Strong Towns members in elected office, and our country will be so much better off with even more of you stepping up as leaders in your cities and towns. Today's listener message comes from Strong Towns member Nathan Bird. Nathan writes, I'm a longtime fan of Strong Towns, and it's exciting to see the growth of the movement over the past few years. I just wanted to share my own small contribution to the bottom-up revolution where I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I believe local elections are an integral part of building a strong town. There's only so many changes that citizen groups can make on their own before they need to get active politically. I always struggled to find resources on how my city government worked and who was running for office. The local paper is expensive and only devotes a small section to local politics. There are a few talk radio shows, but most people my age don't listen to the radio, especially now that COVID has gotten rid of the daily commute. So I decided to start a podcast called Chattanooga Civics, exclusively dedicated to local politics. I've been doing some bite-sized episodes to explain how various parts of local government function, as well as longer interviews with candidates in our upcoming city council and mayoral elections. While my podcast is not explicitly focused on Strong Towns principles, I think getting people educated about and involved in local politics is a foundational step to enacting bottom-up change. Thanks for letting me share, and thanks for all your great work. Thank you, Nathan, for passing on this message. It's great to hear about what you're doing in your city, and we will definitely share a link to your podcast in the show notes. We would love to hear from all of you listening as well. Please send your voicemails in by recording a short memo on your phone, including your name and where you live, or just type up a short message and email it to rachel@strongtowns.org. And one last note before we close, we have exactly a couple of hours before our first locomotive tour stop kicks off. I'm very excited about this new event series we're starting at Strong Towns, and it's not too late to join us. There's going to be 10 events total. All of them will be recorded, so if you happen to miss the first one today, you will not be missing out completely. You can still watch the recording, and we'll have 9 more events coming up over the next several weeks. These are super action-oriented, full of expert advice from people all over the country that are doing great work to build Strong Towns. So head to strongtowns.org/locomotive to sign up. We would love to have you join us. With that, just a quick reminder that Strong Towns is a member-supported organization. We could not do any of this work without you. Please think about making a small contribution, whatever you can afford. We've got folks who support us at $25 a year, $5 a month. It all adds up. So head to strongtowns.org/membership if you want to join us. Thank you so much for your support. All right, everybody, we will see you next week for another episode of the Bottom Up Revolution. Take care.